I did not, forgive me, remember that Michael McDermott's fantastic CD, Out From Under, started that way. That shocked me. I almost jumped out of my chair. Welcome to After Hours with me, Rick Hogan. It's a very full show. In a moment, I'll be talking to an old friend of mine who's written a fascinating... I'm not the kind of guy who would pick up a book called A Rock Fantasy, but I did pick this up because Joyce Isaacson's an old pal, and I quite enjoyed it. She's turned into some writer. Then I'm having in my old friend Dave Currier and a number of people from the suburb of Harvey, which is... There are a lot of suburbs in Chicago. Harvey is one of the most interesting, and there are a bunch of people who are trying to bring it back to life. For those of you who grew up there, you remember what a life that was. It was an incredibly prosperous place. And then we're going to talk about Groundhog Day in Woodstock, which is a vastly different place than Harvey. And then we're going to talk to the great one and only Roger Badish to see how he is coming with his biography. But first, Joyce Isaacson, are you on the phone?
Yes, I am.
Joyce, it's so nice.
Hi, Rick.
It's so nice
to hear
you. I'm good, man. It's so nice to hear your voice. And as I just said, and you probably heard, if I were walking through a bookstore and there was a category called rock fantasy, it is probably one that I would walk by. I'm not a big fantasy guy, but I've got to tell you, I was charmed by your, and it's a very thought-provoking book. Your book is titled Wish You Were Here, Badfinger. Tell me about Badfinger, because I don't know much about this band. I think it's kind of an underrated band, would you say, Joyce?
Yes, I definitely agree with that. Badfinger, they were basically the Princes and the Beatles world. Actually, the Beatles were the ones that discovered Badfinger. And
well, that's certainly a good endorsement if the Beatles like them.
Yeah,
they must
definitely.
Have been. Name a couple Badfinger songs that I might know.
Sure. No Matter What.
No.
Baby Blue.
That sort of rings a bell. Aubrey Mumpower, engineer, is in there who knows more about music. He doesn't know this either. But you obviously are a huge fan of Badfinger because the gist of the book is that one of the members of the band is in the afterlife, and he is trying to reconnect with another member of the band. Is that, in essence, what the book is about?
Yes. During Tommy's search for Pete, he meets old friends and famous new friends on his afterlife voyage.
Well, the afterlife voyage is filled. The thing that intrigued me about it, the afterlife voyage is filled with all manner of people who I do know, and people and musicians that I certainly encountered in real life. When did you, Joyce? I knew you pretty well at the Tribune, I think. I mean, we were kind of friendly. When did you start to become a writer? Because you weren't a writer for the Tribune. You worked in the editorial department. You certainly hung around a lot of writers. Do you think we had any influence on making you a writer?
I think that definitely there was. I was inspired by some of the writers there, and I know some of my friends there who went from copy clerks went to becoming writers as well, and I think that also inspired me to want to write as well.
When you got the writing bug for real, I'm sure also there were people at the paper who did not inspire you, because we both knew it. A few jerks. Not everybody who works at the paper is talented or nice, that's for sure. But at one point you decided to pursue this. Did you, if I'm not mistaken, did you start taking creative writing courses at Columbia?
Yes, I did. And I took one writing course there in my first semester. I did not finish college because I really needed to get my family out of Albany Park at the time, so I started working full-time at the Chicago Tribune. But I got about a B-plus in creative writing. I think I would have gotten an A, but I wrote something that was so out of this world that my teacher said, I can't grade you.
You said your thing is so out of the. What do you think he meant by out of this world? Was it fantasy?
It was definitely a fantasy story. It was from a dream that I had, and he said, "I can't grade this."
And you said, "Well, hey, the hell with you! I can't go to school here." was it difficult once you got this? Is also your second book, and in your book, you tell people who buy this book, and you can buy it by just Google this. Wish You Were Here, Badfinger, a rock fantasy by Joyce Isaacson, Isaacson. At the back of the book, Joyce, you say, "I would like to give you a freebie for reading my book. Please send me an email, and I will send you Rock Dreams." Now, that's your first book, right?
Rock Dreams is actually something I did after my first book. It's basically what it is. They are drawings that I have done since 1979 to 2015, and it has like little tidbits about each band or each artist, and they're very good drawings, actually.
Well, it's good of you to say so, Joyce. I think this is a really interesting book. What's been the feedback from not just Badfinger fans? I'd like to know, because I'm not a Badfinger fan. I didn't know who they were. But what's been the feedback from readers so far?
Well,
I'm going to read
Reader's Favorite.
I'm going to read from this. Here is what one... Sure. Person wrote in a book review. He says, "Although Wish You Were Here, Badfinger, Rock Fantasy is titled as a fantasy genre novel, I found it far more speculative in nature, and it's certainly, and this must have made your heart jump, Joyce, it is certainly a heartfelt drama about discovery and the bonds we have with others. I enjoyed the unusual premise and the allusion to Dante's journey, and whilst the cameos from real-life rock stars of a bygone time were fun, blah, 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 author Joyce Isaacson writes with simplistic beauty that lifts her characters off the page." What was your reaction when you read that?
Like,
did you fall off your chair?
Wow, I couldn't believe it. It was coming from an outsider, somebody that really didn't know my group. And especially they were probably not into Badfinger. But I think the thing is that it's very versatile, the book, because it does have other people, famous people that he meets.
Well, I also think that the book is provocative in that it is a journey of sort of self-discovery. And it is peppered with these other characters that you come to know who are famous characters, but who you sort of recreate on the page. Is that a good endorsement? What do you think of that?
Oh, yes, definitely. I agree. Well, I'm hoping that I can use some of your words, actually,
You can take them all, Joyce.
For the Amazon.
Anything I say on this show about this, fine. And I will say again, this is, if your name wasn't on this book, I never would have picked it up, but I was so intrigued by you becoming a talented fiction writer that I couldn't help myself, and God love you, Joyce Isaacson. I read it. It was a quick and, I think, fascinating read, and I'm not a fantasy kind of guy, so congratulations to you.
Thank you.
What else can I tell you? Keep me posted on your career. I know you got a long time marriage. I know you left the Tribune some time ago. I know you got a kid. I know you got
Yes, he's 26 years old now.
Oh my God, that is so frightening to me.
And I have a grandson now.
You've got to be kidding. That makes me feel. I'm old, but that makes me feel.
No, you're not that old.
I'm old, but that makes me feel 1,000 years old. Joyce, you sound great, and I miss you. You were one of the bright lights at the Tribune when you worked there, I'll tell you that. And now you're.
Thank you. I would love to get together with you at some point.
Absolutely.
I really would.
Where do you live these days? Don't tell me the neighborhood. In Chicago? You still live in
Chicago?
Yes,
I'm in West Rogers Park.
Great. That's an old stomping ground. I will see you sometime before the year is out, and thank you for sending the book, and thank you for writing the book, Joyce.
Oh, you're welcome.
Okay,
do people want to get the book from me, or if they want to get it on Amazon, that's great. But if they want to get sent from me, they can get, I have some freebies for them besides the Rock Dreams. They would get the ebook also for free, and there's a special segment that is not in the book.
Oh, the secret segment of Wish You Were Here, Badfinger.
Uh-huh.
How do they get into? You're on Facebook, right?
I'm on Facebook, you but can, they can also get a hold of me at SharonJ0023@yahoo.com.
Sharon J. All right, I'm finding it.
J.
Yeah, gotcha. SharonJ0023@yahoo.com. Okay, people, hit your computers and get a hold of Joyce and get all the free stuff she has to offer. Congratulations, Joyce.
Thank you.
Not my place to be proud of you, but I'm proud of you anyway, okay?
Okay,
all right,
Rick,
honey.
Thank you so much.
Hope to see you. Thank you. Thanks for writing it. Well, you know, this is what I do on the show. I need product. Joyce, thanks. It's great talking to you. You sound
welcome.
Great. I can't
Take
believe
care,
you're
Rick.
You too. I can't believe you're a grandmother, but that's just the nature of my life. We're going to take a commercial break, and then we are going to explore the Harvey that once was and the Harvey that may be again, thanks to the efforts of Dave Currier, an old friend of mine, and some new friends of his. We're going to talk to them about the efforts to make Harvey great again, because believe me, it was once great. Welcome back. We're still awaiting Dave Currier's colleagues from the effort to resurrect the suburb of Harvey, to make Harvey great again. Your plan, Dave Currier, seems to have kind of three components: to just increase voter awareness, then register voters, and then I suppose you guys are going to, you know, figure out which candidates to back.
Right now,
the people who share your vision.
Since Chappelle is closest to it, she's vetting the candidates right now, and she has a person in mind for mayor. She hasn't totally decided yet because she's very thorough in her considerations. And we will then, in addition to creating interest, hopefully encourage people to vote for the folks that we think might do the best job. So, yeah, our plan, our key thing is, in the last elections, I think only 1,400 people voted, and Harvey is a population of about 27,000, and there's a lot of young voters out there, too.
Well, it's the millennia. When you look at the nationwide statistics, and now with everybody complaining about a certain guy in the White House,
yeah.
3% of millennials voted. I mean, you're not going to change anything with that. I'm not saying that there is a general consensus on the part of millennials, but in Harvey, I would think, to your point, that the young people of Harvey who are living there may actually want to stay living there.
It's true. The folks have a passion and don't want to leave the town, much like my mother. My mother never left the town.
Yeah.
And what I like is the parents, a light bulb went off, and they said, my kids are old enough to vote. I'll get them registered. So that's why Chappelle started her Facebook page, in hopes of keeping people both informed and giving them a place to go to voice their needs and concerns. And that's called Harvey, Illinois, hashtag been there, done that. Mm. Everything you want to know about what we're doing is there. We also, not to do a commercial, but we started
this a GoFundMe. This should be a commercial for Harvey.
Oh,
I'm serious.
Okay, thank you. We started a GoFundMe page in hopes of some of the, maybe the past successful folks might step up and help us. It's been a bit disappointing. However, it's early.
It may just be they don't know about it.
True.
I mean, that's one of the things. You don't have,
Well, and this is going to help, the exposure.
$300,000 to have ads on the air,
right,
or anything to do this, to help Harvey and to get that exposure. And I know you've sort of spread the word to Dreesen, and you've got, Lupe Fiasco, who's a huge sort of musical star, seemed like a nice kid, and maybe he will do for Harvey what Chance the Rapper started to
do. You know, I didn't know that name.
For the city of Chicago.
There's another young young man from Thornton Township High School named LaRoyce Hawkins, who is one of the stars
of Chicago PD.
Yes.
Yeah, sure.
Yes. And I reached out to, and I know these folks are busy. They're probably inundated with requests.
Well, but the other thing, you reached out also, Dave Currier, to Jeff Bezos.
I did.
How did you get his email, for instance?
Jeff Bezos, to his credit, makes his email public, as does the Microsoft fellow. I think it's Tim Allen. I also wrote him asking if perhaps he would donate tablets to help us register voters.
Well, look who we just had.
Oh,
before we get to the other letter. Chappelle Hooks, we've been talking about you for the last 15 minutes. Now, I'm going to have you come on the radio with an introduction from Mr. Currier. It's a pleasure to meet you.
You too.
Pleasure to meet you. Sorry, the parking.
Do you know, Rick,
difficult.
This is the first time I've met her in person. I feel like
you're kidding.
I know her forever.
But you've hooked him into this, what I think is just a great effort. Chappelle, Dave was saying, you can move that a little further.
Here. I'm loud. I'm loud.
Yes, he is.
Well, Dave was saying that you, I think your mother or father drew you back after you growing up in Harvey. They drew you back and said, look, come back here, move in here, move your, is that what happened?
Well, what happened was my father passed 3 years ago, and he said, you know, I want you to come back. You know, this house.
Where'd you been? Where'd you go?
Well, I had moved to Chicago Heights, which
okay.
is another
city. Yeah, I know, sure.
Yes. And when he passed, he wanted me to come back, so I did.
Were you reluctant or eager to come back?
Actually, it was kind of reluctant.
Yeah, I'll bet. Sure, sure.
Because of the things that you hear.
Well, see, this is one of the things that Dave and I were talking about. Harvey, and it's true of certain neighborhoods in Chicago. You get the reputation, you can't shake the reputation. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly.
You know, if anybody's going to tell me that, you know, that Englewood does not have good people in it, that Lawndale doesn't have good people in it, these people just want to get along and make a better life. And the same is true of Harvey, the same is true of Dalton, the same is true of Chicago Heights. So it occurred to you to rope in guys like Dave to start this Make Harvey Great Again.
Well, actually, my father never complained. He pretty much had it under control in his area. But once he passed, I started to notice a lot of things that the people were saying and putting as far as the reputation.
Yeah.
So I decided to start going to the city hall meetings, and that's when I started to see that a lot of things...
Something is wrong.
Yes.
Something is wrong,
something needs to be fixed. Yes, and I just felt as if, you know, it was pretty much like a calling. You know, if I had to come back, I needed to do something because of the years that my dad had spent there.
Yeah, and your dad's energy had been expended.
Yes.
How old are your children?
My oldest son is 28.
Okay, is he with you there?
No, actually, he just moved out.
Okay, you have anybody, other kids there?
Yes, I have...
you don't have to name their names.
A 26-year-old, mm-hmm. I have 24, 23, I have a 16-year-old.
You know what those are called? Those are called millennials. Those are the kind of people who should be voting in the next election.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And this is your big... Are they working toward this thing, too?
Yes.
Or are they like, Mom, no?
No, they are enthusiastic about me running. Because I am going to run for 5th ward.
Are you really?
Yes, I am.
How many wards are there in Harvey?
We have 6.
6 wards. You're going to run for 5th ward alderman in Harvey.
Yes.
Well, I don't live in Harvey, but I would vote for you just on this 3 minutes that we have met so far. And your platform, so to speak, is to bring business back to Harvey.
Yes.
To help the housing stock in Harvey is a little shot. It's been beaten up over the years.
Yes.
But there's still some nice housing stock there and some nice land,
Yes,
too.
It is. Yes. And I brought with me Craig Abram. He's
I thought he was your bodyguard.
You know,
we can all sneak on these microphones. It's a pleasure to meet you.
Hi, Craig.
Now, nice who is Craig? Introduce him.
Craig is a longtime friend of mine. He's a Harvey resident, a longtime resident, and also his family has been in politics forever in Harvey.
Does that mean that you want to get in politics? Sure, you can share this mic with me.
I'm running for the second time.
Ran before?
Yes.
For what?
Second ward alderman.
And did you win? You lost?
No, I didn't win. I lost.
Why?
Well, part of the reason...
Because you're running against incumbents, right, and incumbents. People who are entrenched.
Right. Yes. And then, two, the problem is, in my ward, we have a very low voter turnout. So the winner actually won with only 389 votes.
Oh, come on.
Yes.
Yeah. Come on.
And that's part of the problem. Yep. Well, we have 15,000 registered voters. And the most... We had the most people voted was during the presidential election when Barack Obama won.
Right.
We had 10,000 voters.
Wow.
That voted. And we only had 3,000 vote for the local election. And you know, it's
voter apathy is a horrible, horrible thing.
Yep.
And
it keeps
the entrenched, when something is bad, it keeps it bad.
Mm-hmm.
People give up.
They do.
You two seem very charismatic and committed to me. What's the effort going to take? I mean, the other bad thing about politics, it takes money to run.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's corrupted sometimes by the money it takes to run. But as local Harvey, I just think you guys have... I'd vote for... Who's running? Are you backing anyone for mayor in this?
Well, right now, we're really trying to get their platforms out.
And
so
see who they are,
right,
and see what they've
got.
Right,
to really see the agendas, because the agendas before...
Didn't work. I mean, we don't have to get into the real, as the four of us could easily do off air, but it's just, it didn't work.
Right.
Harvey is not being resurrected. Harvey is not being helped. Harvey is like, it's like a person in a cancer ward. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And you guys are going to come up with the new medicine.
Yes.
We got to take a break. We're now here with Dave Currier, Chappelle Hooks, and Craig Abron, is it?
Abron.
They're going to change Harvey. They're going to, part of their platform is to make Harvey great again. We'll be back in a couple minutes and continue this conversation. Welcome back. We are changing the face of Harvey, Illinois, here with Craig Abron, Chappelle Hooks, Dave Currier, and me. You are running for alderman, Chappelle.
Yes.
You are running for alderman. That'd be two out of the six wards.
That's right.
And I suppose you are going to very closely observe the good people and maybe jokers who want to run for mayor of that city, aren't you? You're going to parse them pretty hard, aren't
Correct.
You?
Correct.
Yeah, there's some of the current administration's folks that are going to run for mayor, and we're hopeful that, we don't want to continue this mismanagement of Harvey's future, and that's why we're trying to get the right candidates and get the right number of voters out there to help.
You have, you two especially, Dave, until you move back, and I'm sure Chappelle will make you move back very soon once you can find the suitable building and stuff.
Move back and run for mayor.
There you go.
You knew he was after something. I want to ask the two of you specifically. You're running for political office. Politics is a nasty game. You both seem sincere to me, and you both seem to believe that Harvey can be saved. How can you save it? Chappelle, you first.
Well, my first ideas will have to go towards the living conditions because I actually was thinking about them opening, since the University of Chicago merged with Ingalls.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking, because they do have interns, I was thinking of them opening up apartments or like a lodging area for the interns so that they don't have to travel back and forth.
Boy, that's a good idea.
And Ingalls is one of the proud Harvey traditions that's still, you know, very well respected. The high school's still very strong. But like Chappelle's alluding to, all the things that make a community great have spiraled down. The parks, the grade schools.
Yeah. Well, because the tax base is...
That's it. It all comes to that.
Craig, give me... I mean, this is your second go-round here. And it's always a great thing if you didn't get the bad taste of politics out of your mouth yet and you want to do it. I mean, obviously you want to do it to help people.
Yes. Yes. Well, the first thing I want to do, and I noticed the YMCA. Mm-hmm. We have the only YMCA in the whole South Suburbs, and it's closed to the public. We can't even use it. So, and that, in the summertime, people wonder why the children are so...
loose and unstructured,
because they have nothing to do. There's no after school programs. You know, we can't use the pools, the weight rooms, or anything like that. I started actually a campaign on Facebook to try to get the YMCA open. I've called the YMCA in Chicago, the head office,
headquarters,
and no one has called me back. They haven't returned any of my phone calls. So, what I'm trying to do now is get a form letter together and send it to all the mayors in the South Suburban area, South Suburban Cook County. And try to get everybody behind it so we can push to get the YMCA open, you know.
See, I am such a believer in these grassroots efforts. I mean, that don't always work out, but I mean, at least the three of you, and there have to be others. I mean, your kids are involved. I mean, you have some kind of family involved in this whole thing. What do you do about the housing down there? Do you knock them down and sell land? I mean, there is a you know, always has been a housing problem in that area. Parks.
There's still good houses.
Oh, no question.
There,
no question.
You know, that they could, you know, rehab or, you know, what have you, and some of them are huge. Like, we have some houses that are very large that you could probably make into an apartment or whatever.
You'll refashion them for even other uses. Yeah. Instead, because there's something horrible about an empty structure in any neighborhood. It says, it doesn't say anything good.
It's an
eyesore. Yeah. Part of the frustration for folks that have been, there's folks before us that have been trying to do good, is City Hall, there's no one to talk to. They turn a deaf ear.
I get that sense.
They don't. Their priorities are not to make Harvey better. It's to make themselves better.
Yes.
So if we could get that going.
When is the election?
Well, the primaries are in February. And then the election's in November.
April 2019.
So we've got some time to get. We're calling it Chappelle's Army. We're just a small group now.
But the registration effort will be a big one. And you'll be back on the show. I want to chart this. Really do want to chart these efforts. Where can people go to find someone listening who lives in Glencoe, and I do mean this, or Evanston, or in the North Side? Where can they go to find out more about this now? And there's a GoFundMe page. I don't even know how to...
GoFundMe, Rick.
How do you do that?
You can just Google GoFundMe and punch in Make Harvey Great Again, and our page will pop up. And there's been some kind people that have donated already. Like you and I were talking off air, it would be great if some of our more successful past residents might...
They just need to know about it. I mean,
you're right.
This is maybe one of the initial efforts to spread the word.
And then you
figure out how to spread it in a two-minute TV kind of thing, you know? And
because your audience is, your demographics are not Harvey, let's face it. But the people that have left Harvey and gone on to things that you like, books and music.
Know. I mean, Tom Dreesen, who's famous, his heart is still there.
For sure.
He has a street there.
Yes.
For God's sake.
He was at the alumni picnic last year.
Was he?
Thornton High School.
Have you met him?
I just shook his hand.
I think
he's a good guy. He does a lot of charity work. Does a lot of work with, you know, Rick. With
the veterans. I think he would be a good guy. I think Fiasco might be a good guy to hit up. But there are all these other people out there, like you, Dave Currier, who grew up there, have fond memories.
Yes.
Go ahead.
We also have, and I do keep in touch with some of the guys that I went to high school with. One of them is Hula Mahone, and Hula Mahone, Maurice Joshua, and Craig Simpkins. They all are who Maurice is a Grammy Award winning producer, and Hula
from where? Thornton.
From Thornton High School. They went to Thornton, and he grew up in Harvey. And Hula also produced "Summertime" for Will Smith, Jazzy Jeff, and the Fresh Prince.
There's privileged people out there from Harvey.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to try to get them on board too, and you know maybe get them to reach out with some people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to just have a kind of voter registration event.
Yes.
That's what
the
page was designed to do.
Right.
Our hope was, I'm sorry, Rick, to interrupt. If we could raise a decent amount of money, we could do a big event for people that register and vote, reward them in some way. Not with cash, but we were thinking about maybe a very significant raffle with, I don't know what, maybe
now,
we could get somebody to donate.
Are you two sort of trying to recruit other aldermen to join aldermen of the first? You're second, right?
Yeah. Right.
You're fifth of the six. You need 1, 3.
Well, the problem is, well, now it's not a problem. Actually, it's kind of a good thing. There's term limits.
Yes.
So the alderman in the second ward and the fifth ward can't run anymore.
And they're disciples of the mayor, so that's a good thing.
So it's going to be, and I know a few of the other candidates that are running.
Yeah.
And they're new.
Sure.
One of the candidates is that's currently one of the aldermen, he's running. Two of them are going to run for mayor, so those two seats are. So it's four out of the six seats that are up.
But it's interesting. I think the two of you seem like the perfect foundation for a coalition here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I the next time you come on, which will be within a couple months, to talk about the progress you've made and who you're thinking about for mayor. If it's not Dave Currier. But so they can go to the GoFundMe page.
Yes. And then
is there a Facebook page?
Yeah,
a Facebook presence?
Tell them about your page.
Yes, I created a page called Harvey, Illinois, Been There, Done That.
Okay.
It's for the people that have lived in Harvey and who are living there currently, to allow them to give their input on what they think, should take place.
This is great, because what you want to start to foster here is a dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't have all the answers. I don't have any of the answers, but that's the best. It seems that people who might have been in power thought they had all the answers, and they were sort of self, as everybody does.
Right.
But you want a dialogue to start.
There's people out there with great ideas. We just have to energize them and get them engaged.
Yeah, and get a voter registration.
Because
thing
it's
going.
It's a lot of a lot of people that use social media, to actually see what's going on in different places besides the news and things like that.
Oh yeah, please, because that doesn't.
And
do
with
it.
And with with us living there, like I had explained to David that I see these things. I see what goes on here. A lot of what you hear in the news,
I could not agree with you
more.
It's
not correct.
Yes.
No, it's feet on the ground.
Yes.
It's feet on the ground.
And she is tenacious about, people generalize, the gangs. And Chappelle will go right at them and say there's hardly any gang presence here.
No gang presence.
Is there crime? Yes. Major
crime everywhere.
Have been flat to steady, homicides and murders. Now, what's up is burglary and robberies because people have no money. They want to eat.
No, I get it.
But overall, Harvey is not. The reputation is not deserved.
I agree.
No, it's not.
And when you look at the past of Harvey, you can actually kind of dream the future, can't you?
Yeah, we saw what it was once like.
You guys are something. Craig Abrons running for a second ward alderman in Harvey. Chappelle Hooks is running for fifth ward alderman in Harvey. They have hooked in Dave Currier, who will be of help somehow until he takes
over. I'm just an old guy with an iPhone.
Wants to be mayor. You're invited on in a couple months. I want to keep this sort of revolving story because I think it could also inspire other suburbs and even other neighborhoods in Chicago, some of which are bigger than many suburbs.
Yeah.
I wish you both luck, but you'll be back on and we'll see how the luck's going.
Yes, we'll be back.
It is a pleasure to meet you guys. And I
you too.
Fingers crossed for Harvey, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you, Rick.
Thank you.
It's really my pleasure, but now it's an ongoing thing.
Yeah. Yes. A lot of hard work to do.
We'll be keeping tabs on Harvey.
Yes.
There's an old man at the counter, and he couldn't feed himself. No one seemed to make a move to offer any help. The waitress didn't notice.
That is, I'm really growing fonder by the day of Michael McDermott, especially from his latest CD, Out From Under. I have for many years been fond of the town of Woodstock, and if it wasn't just a little too far for me, I would live there. Rick Bellairs is lucky enough to live there and to sell homes in the area. Rick, how are you?
I'm good, Rick. Good to talk to you.
You too. It's always good to talk to you. You know, it's so interesting that I had on, just in the last hour, three people trying to kind of resurrect and bring back to its former glory the south suburb of Harvey. Woodstock, to my mind, we're going to talk specifically about a couple events coming up, but whenever I get Rick on the phone, I love to talk about Woodstock in general. Woodstock has never had, Rick, and tell me I'm wrong, a real kind of economic downturn, has it?
Oh, I think the economic downturn from, 2006 or 7 through...
But that affected everybody, yeah.
It did, and it certainly affected things out here, the real estate market, for one, I felt personally.
I'll bet you
and
did.
And there was a downturn in businesses. There were a few of the industries that left Woodstock and a few stores around the square that closed. But, you know, those empty storefronts on the Woodstock Square have been refilled, and home prices are moving back up again.
Well, it seemed it's a resilient town, and there's no denying that even take your real estate hat off for a second, Rick Bellairs, and try to tell me a lovelier Midwestern, a lovelier Illinois town than Woodstock. Can you think of one? I mean, feel free to, you know, say, oh, Geneva's nice or something, but Woodstock has always had a real pull for me, and I know it has for you too. It actually doesn't get much prettier, does it?
It really doesn't. Whether it's springtime or fall, whatever, on the Woodstock Square, this time of the year, the farmer's market, the farmer's market is on Tuesdays and Saturdays around the town square, and the town is just buzzing.
I think part of the reason for that is you a lot of towns at one point most towns had town squares or sort of central areas. Woodstock has been able to retain that. It wasn't taken over by corporate entities, and that I think is one of its great charms. And it does have those great stores around there, like the Read Between the Lines, one of my favorite independent bookstores in the country. Has that place where Bill Murray lived during Groundhog Day that was turned into a bed and breakfast, has that place been sold yet?
It was sold. The new owners, it's the name changed. It's called the Cherry Tree Inn B&B, and they are bustling. It's a great place to stay if you're just coming to visit Woodstock for a night or a weekend.
Yeah.
Cherry Tree Inn, it's the B&B that was in the movie Groundhog Day.
Yeah, I love that. I did a stunt. I guess you were selling it a few years. I guess you did sell it, didn't you? And I just, it's famous as the Bill Murray home, and there is nothing that makes Woodstock more famous than the fact that in 1992, Harold Ramis and a bunch of actors and technicians and even his daughter Violet came in for a few weeks to make what has become a comedy classic that has also been, Rick Bellairs, very good for the town, hasn't it?
Oh, it really has. And little did we know 26 years ago that the movie would have this lasting impact. You know, little did we know that it would become sort of a classic in its own right. And we started celebrating Groundhog Day many years ago on February 2nd. And in the last couple of years, one of the people on the committee suggested, why do we only do this once a year in the middle of winter? Why don't we celebrate halfway to Groundhog Day? So that's what we're doing this week.
Well, I think we'll talk more about it. I'm keeping you this whole half hour because I'm so fascinated with Woodstock and now Harold Ramis and his family. When this suggestion was made, I think it's brilliant, but did anybody in the meeting there go, oh, come on, that's too much? You know what I mean? Say, what are you, nuts? We're going to have Groundhog Day on, halfway to Groundhog Day on August 2nd? Were there any dissenting voices?
No, I don't think so. Wow. Although it's kind of nice to be on a committee where your event is for like 3-4 days once a year, and you just kind of take the summer off and you don't have to do any planning. So this did kind of put us all back in the hot seat and start, you know, making plans for yet another event.
Well, was there any notion? Well, the event in February has expanded initially from, I suppose it was just a one day see the groundhog and have a drink and watch a movie or something
it even started before we had the groundhog coming back. It was just Groundhog Day and okay, here it is.
You didn't even have a groundhog. Rick, that's horrible. Rick Beller, that's horrible. You didn't even have a groundhog for the first Groundhog Day. I actually love that. Rick, you had a very, very well-known father in Mal.
Thanks.
When did he remind me and the listeners, because I know you have fans out there, when did you guys move back to Woodstock when you were, I know you were there as a teenager, but it was before that?
I grew up in Wilmette, and my dad was on WVBM from 1953 to 1969.
Wow.
And I still run into people who remember the White Fence Farm commercials and other things. His Christmas show that he did around Christmas time every year, I hear from people who say they grew up listening to that. So he was on BBM for those 15 or 16 years. And when CBS and WVBM went all news, he didn't want to sit and read news and wanted to do something different and started looking for a place where he could be his own boss. He'd been in radio for a long time at that point, and he decided he wanted to call the shots. And he found the AM radio station for sale in Crystal Lake nearby to Woodstock. And a couple years later, the FM station in Woodstock came available. So we moved to the Bull Valley area between Woodstock and Crystal Lake in 1969, and he started operation of the radio stations out here then. So that's when my family moved out here.
Wow, that's a good story. He was quite a guy. I mean, I know often when I have you on the air, it'll happen to me Monday morning, I'll come into the office and there'll be a bunch of emails saying, that guy was great about the Woodstock and the thing. I remember his father doing this. You as a child, did you ever want to get into this idiotic business?
I did. I worked alongside my dad at the local radio stations out here for a number of years. And the family sold the radio stations, I was looking for to do it. Ended up taking a job in Tokyo, Japan, for an English language radio operation that was. And I went and worked in for 4 years.
Oh, how interesting! I didn't know that. You know a guy and don't know a guy. We got to take a break. I mean, we'll come back and give you more details. The halfway to Groundhog Day is indeed only a day. It's actually an afternoon and evening, but it sounds really charming, and it's in many ways, you know, the nice thing about you folks out there, during this thing, you'll be collecting school supplies. It's your community based and your community there. We'll take a short commercial break and talk some more to Rick Bellairs. I am talking, and it is always my pleasure to do so, with Rick Bellairs, who is the real estate maven of the Woodstock and the surrounding area. Also an actor of some note who abandoned his career shortly after an appearance, one of my favorite, almost a cameo appearance in Groundhog Day when Harold Ramis came to Woodstock and shot that ever-loving, wonderful, timeless music. It's just an incredible movie, and it's grown, as has Groundhog Day celebrations in Woodstock on August 2nd. The first, the inaugural, halfway to Groundhog Day will take place. It's mostly an evening thing, is it not, Rick? It was starting with a 5:30 walking tour of the film sites?
That's right. This Thursday, August 2nd, 6 months halfway between Groundhog Days, we'll do the walking tour around town to some of the sites, like where Bill Murray stepped in the puddle over and over again, and where he meets the annoying insurance salesman and Ned Ryerson. So we'll talk about some of those things. Then we've got our polka band from the Groundhog Day festivities. We'll be playing in Bandstand in the square. About 7:30, we're going to drink to world peace. We're going to skip the sweet vermouth that Bill Murray and Andy McDowell drank. A local business, OWC, is providing free lemonade in the park for a drink to world peace. And once it gets dark enough, we will show the movie right in the park. So we're telling people to bring lawn chairs and blankets. You can watch the movie Groundhog Day right where most of the movie was filmed.
Yeah,
so it's Thursday evening.
I think, and if it is going to be held rain or shine, in case of bad weather, it'll take place inside the Opera House and Stage Left Cafe, which are very lovely places, too. Rick, you mentioned that Drink to World Peace, and that was one of the elements in the film. You and I both have had the recent, for me, great pleasure to meet Harold Ramis's daughter, Violet Ramis Steele. You conducted, actually. I interviewed her at the Printersville Lit Fest that Saturday, where shamefully there were no. Can you imagine this? She was a big hit. I'm really good at promoting and selling books, and they didn't have any of her books. Isn't that shameful? And so she was saying, "Oh, I hope they have books." I kept telling her, have a great time in Woodstock. She had not been there since she was a 14-year-old who came in to visit her dad. But she had fond memories of it, and she had the nicest time there. Did you enjoy having her there?
It was really nice to have her here. We had her give a presentation in the Harold Ramis Auditorium, which is in the Woodstock Theater, and she got to see a letter that Harold wrote to the city of Woodstock after filming was done here. Then we went across to Read Between the Lines, the independent bookstore on the square, where Violet did a book signing, and it was very cute. There was a guy who showed up in full Ghostbusters regalia, and another guy who he was in tears telling Violet how much her dad meant to him.
Oh my.
It was very sweet. And then I guess Arlene and Violet went over to the Public House restaurant and sat where Bill Murray and Andy McDowell drank to world peace.
They did indeed. Yeah, she was I gotta tell you, she was really charmed by all of you guys, and obviously you read the book too, and I think the book's really good. I think it's really interesting. It is called Ghostbusters' Daughter, but it's not just about a kind of fawning, God, wasn't my dad cool kind of book. It's a very honest, didn't you think, Rick?
Shockingly at times. Yeah.
Yeah. At one point she goes, my father smoked a lot. He's Vantage 100s nonstop and marijuana by the pound. At one point, it made, at least in you know, I knew Harold a little and not well at all, but it made Harold really a more fascinating human being than I even had imagined beforehand.
One of the people in the audience when she was giving her presentation, I didn't know this at the time but found out after, was one of the caretakers, one of Harold's caretakers at the end of his life, and she and Violet had a sort of a touching reunion, getting back together again after all these years.
Ugh. When she also tells him the story, the weird, weird relationship that Harold Ramis had with Bill Murray, and they kind of, for God knows what reason, it's still very, very mysterious, they kind of broke up during Groundhog Day over the things that no one really will ever know. And it was weird and touching. I'm sure you remember in the book, Rick Belair's, weird and touching at the same time, when, you know, they did not talk for many, many years. And when Harold got very, very sick and was dying, Bill Murray showed up at their Highland Park home with a police escort, unannounced, a police escort and a box of donuts, and he went in to the bedroom or whatever kind of room Harold was in, and they sat there, and Violet said she could hear, you know, maybe some laughter, but her dad was not very communicative. And then he left. And that's, you know, that's Violet Ramis Steele's godfather, for goodness sake. It's a story that really chills me because no one will ever know the full outcome of it. How is...
It is such a shame after, you know, their careers were so tied with Stripes and Caddyshack and Ghostbusters and Groundhog Day and all these movies that they did together, a wonderful career that ran parallel. And then, yeah, something happened in Groundhog Day, and they didn't talk for 20 years.
Yeah.
Till right at the end of Harold's life. I do remember watching the, I think it must have been the Academy Awards, when Bill Murray gave some kind of shout-out to Harold Ramis.
Right.
And it was like, it's a shame it was so late.
Yeah, just very, very, very strange. But on a happier note, halfway to Groundhog Day, you know, I'm going to predict something, Rick Bellairs. I'm going to predict something. If it goes off as well as it's planned, and let's say it's a beautiful night, like one of the most beautiful nights that we've recently had here, it might expand to, I would, this would be an unbelievable thing to have the halfway to Groundhog Day week. I'm not sure that's going to happen. Rick, I know you sell real estate out there. Give yourself a plug. How can people find you and see what's selling out there? How can they find Rick Bellairs?
I'm with Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, and my website is rickbellairs.com. So if you can spell Bellairs, you can get there. Rickbellairs.com. And yeah, the market's doing much better out here now. It's still slow in what is our upper price range, but people would be surprised what they can get for a 3-4 2.5 bath home in train line and then an easy commute to Chicago if that's what you have to do.
Well, that is it would be a joy. I'm just too old to commute more than about 4 or 5 blocks. Rick, I let me know how it goes. I'll be watching the weather reports, but this August 2nd, I know a lot of you are on vacation. I could think of no more charming evening than to at 5:30 in Woodstock take a walking tour of the film sites from the Groundhog Day movie, 6:30 a polka band, 7:30 drink to world peace, and then as the sun goes down at 8:30 to, you know, spread yourself out in a blanket in that beautiful town square and watch Groundhog Day. And also go to Read Between the Lines bookstore and get a copy of Ghostbusters' Daughter. That's the full halfway to Groundhog Day. Rick, it is always a great pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks very much, Rick. Appreciate
okay,
it.
Take care. We'll do it again. Rest assured. Rest assured. Coming up, after he delivers with his typical professionalism, the news, we will check in once again with Roger Badish on the status of his soon-to-be best-selling autobiography. So please stay tuned. That was Michael McDermott from Out From Under. Here is Roger Badish.
Hi,
out from the studio just down the hall.
Yeah, it's a lot shorter walk this time.
All right, I have to ask you because we catch up sometimes between shows or we're fawning over Lori Shelley or something.
Please.
And Roger knows the great thing about you. You know, like half the people who come in here, you're either friends on Facebook or you've known them for a while. I mean, which I think is a great thing.
Well, I don't know that I know them until they're on with you. That's
you go, wait a minute, that's my old girlfriend. Yeah. Wait a minute.
And then I find out later on Facebook that She talked to you about Heron Camp.
Yeah.
I went to school with the daughter of the founder of Heron Camp.
Get out of here.
I went to school in Evanston, Janice
of
Gavin.
Of course.
And when I found out, like, on Monday, and I saw Janice type something, I go, wait a minute. How do you guys? Oh, my gosh.
It goes back to that whole Chicago is a small town.
Oh, it is.
But I haven't asked you yet about, we haven't talked since we've moved into these new studios.
Yeah.
Oh, what do you, you're obviously a fan. I see on Facebook you take photos and stuff. Is this as good as a radio studio will ever be, given that the future is probably...
Yeah.
You know, having a radio studio in your, you know, something as big as a phone.
That's already there,
yeah.
In my opinion. I think this facility, beautiful, absolutely beautiful. I think it's geared towards the future.
Oh,
I think it's ready for whatever the future holds in radio broadcasting, internet broadcasting, whatever you want to call it. It is still broadcasting. We're reaching a large group of people, whether they're on terrestrial radio, whether they're on the internet, whether they're listening on the phone, even though we're still talking to them one-to-one.
Yeah.
That's always been radio's appeal. And my own personal opinion is that no matter what, radio, this type of communication with the general public, I think, will always be there because there will always be a need for it, whatever format that need takes.
Wow, that's very interesting. You have to put that in your book. I think when you go
save the tape,
future.
Aubrey. Well, I'll have to transcribe.
Yeah, save all this tape and we'll just transcribe much of it. How is, I mean, Roger Badish's book was born and sort of born on this show when I sort of browbeat him into. After listening to one story, one compelling, fascinating story after another, I literally said, because I felt the need to have it, I said, you should write a book. And
I kind of hemmed and hawed for a while.
You did.
Yeah.
But then, well, because also at the time, your Facebook posts had the feel of diary-like chapters from your life. And you were obviously enjoying it. Now you have publishers who are interested in the book. Mm-hmm. You haven't been doing much work this summer, you told me.
Yeah, it's our son came back from Spain. He had been working in Spain all of last school year, and he's back for the summer. Well, my writing space, and I'm one who needs that space.
It's his bedroom. Yeah.
It's his bedroom, yeah. So he's been in there, and... Well, I absconded his bedroom while he was away and made it my writing space. I have two writing spaces. Both of them, I can be away from people. One of them is in the kitchen, our little kitchenette table, but that's because I'm typing when no one's awake, early in the morning when I first wake up. Well, my thoughts aren't really flowing book-wise at that point. So once everyone wakes up, I now need a separate place away from everyone. And so I'll pick up the laptop and bring it into the bedroom and sit down and get everything set up. I've got the air purifier in there. I've got the fan blowing. I got my
a bottle of bourbon and a pack of Camels.
I'm not at the bourbon yet.
And a pack of Camels.
Yeah, it could be.
Ernest Hemingway.
Yeah. And that's where I do my writing, and you and I have talked about my unique, I don't know if it's unique yet because I haven't seen anyone do this for a book, but my unique resource material other than my brain.
Yeah.
And I have finished at least the first draft. Finished, because I'm sure if I went back and started to read each one now,
I told you before, I think what you're doing is really the way to do it is to plow through and get something on paper, because you can always go back.
You can always go back. So I have finished my chapter on our lives in Las Vegas, and I have finished the chapter of my 20 years of teaching.
Yeah.
Even though I'm not writing it, but I can't remember if I told you this last time, but I have asked former students to send in their first impressions of me.
No, yeah. You didn't tell me that because I think that is a brave. It is a very very brave but fascinating idea. Have you gotten any?
Yes. I've gotten about 10 of them.
And
most of them kind of were what I expected, actually.
Which is, what did you expect?
Well, I expected them.
You were such a great teacher.
No, no. I fully expected all of them to start out. Who the hell is this bald headed and at one point ponytailed?
Oh my God! Right,
Mr. Know It All. Who is making us read this book and take these notes? And the unique thing was, at least at Chicago Vocational and at Clemente High School, where I was teaching a vocational program, as opposed to one semester of radio or one semester of TV where kids could come in and out, I had them for 3 years. I had the same students for 3 years.
That's remarkable.
So I would teach sophomores, juniors, and seniors each semester, but they were the same ones for 3 years. So you can understand how their perspective over 3 years might change.
Yeah.
And the writings, the recollections that I'm getting in, and now it's been... So my last class at Chicago Vocational was 2012... And the first one was in 2000. So I'm getting students from 2000. I have not seen them since they graduated 2000.
Or been in touch with them at
all? Well, I have. I've got a lot of them on Facebook. A lot of them I have friended. I never had them as friends on Facebook while they were my students. It was a rule I had.
Yeah.
But I knew that their friends were some of my former students, so they could see... You know, post
right,
or whatever.
I think that's fascinating.
So I'm getting a lot of those, and so I'm copying them and putting them into the chapter, and then kind of, you know, formatting them a little bit because some of them are free form.
Yeah, of course. Sure,
and
sure, sure.
I've been brought to tears several times, and I've had my wife look at them, and it's extremely moving.
But that's what. You may not have expected that, but that is what one gets in the profession of teaching to do.
If one cares about teaching because it's teaching, as opposed to teaching because I can make a lot of money and this and that, and I got short hours.
Summers off.
Well, you don't get summers off, trust me.
Oh, I know.
Don't get me started. Don't get me started. But, if you really go into it with your heart and a desire... to enlighten the young future leaders of our world, then you will be continually amazed.
And rewarded.
You will continually be rewarded and emotionally involved in a movement that other people can't experience.
Wow. Yeah, please keep this tape because that verbatim should be in that book somewhere. We got to take a break, and we'll be back in 3 minutes with Roger Badish.
I dreamt of you and me on the Celtic Sea.
That is the last time today you will hear Michael McDermott from his CD Out From Under. I've got... never enough time with Roger Badish, but he certainly made me increasingly want to get this book. I mean, he's writing a book based on what I think is one of the most fascinating lives of anybody I've encountered. He's been a teacher. He's been a press aide to mayors of Chicago. He put in the stereo equipment in Harold Washington's apartment building with those parrots outside in the tree. And he's been a newsman. You've had a... wonderfully varied career, and I hope also you will do the sort of technological, because you taught radio for a while too, and you were so articulate just 10-15 minutes ago about how you see this station as a place in the as being built for the future, which to me, I can't tell that at all.
Well, I think it. I mean, you've done radio.
I have, but I just sit and talk in a microphone and read a book,
you've been doing it a long time. You've seen it changed, both as a user of the radio on this side and a user as a regular listener, right. No matter what station you might listen to. And so you have a feel for radio. You have a feel for broadcasting.
Well, I have a feel for the. What you've always taught me is that this is the intimate,
yes,
medium.
It is extremely so.
Yeah.
People, whether they want to admit it or not, and this is radio since day one, since 1920.
Mm-hmm.
Radio has always been. We call it broadcasting, but it's always one-on-one.
Yep.
People who listen to us, no matter how young or old, believe that my voice is talking directly to them, that voice is directing to them. If they don't like your voice, if they don't like what you're saying, if they don't like your views, they will let you know it, as they would someone in their own family.
Yeah.
If they like what you're saying, and if they like your voice, and if they like the medium, the delivery system, you won't hear about it.
Exactly.
Unless you go to, like there are some hosts on the radio who have millions of lovers and have been doing it for decades and decades. And when they go someplace, it's like, oh, there's so-and-so. And, sure. But it's on a... It's an expanding universe because of the internet.
Yeah.
But it's still a local thing. I wore my hat, my so WGN radio hat,
yeah,
when we went over to Europe,
yeah,
7-8 years ago. Not one single person said, oh, hey, WGN Radio Chicago, yeah, hey, how you doing?
Yeah. How's Al Capone? Al Capone.
Nah, not even Chicago. Nothing. Nothing. No one even asked, where are you from? Nothing. And we were in Milan, we were in Rome, we were in London.
Yeah.
For 2 weeks, nothing. But in Chicago, I'll go golf at the golf course up by me, play 9 holes, and with, you know, just kind of join a group of people that are up. And by the 6th hole, they're going, oh, you're Roger Banish? I know that voice. All right.
What was Wally Phillips really like?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I'll tell him, talk to Aubrey. But yeah, it's and I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I tell myself, wow, somebody's actually listening.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's not that I wouldn't do this if no one was listening. You know how much I love broadcasting.
Oh, I do.
So when someone does do that, it's a little kick. It's a little like, wow, somebody's actually listening. You know, I'm reaching that one person.
Yeah.
And that is a big part of what we do here.
What do you think, Roger, and maybe you'll get into this in the book too, but about this increasing, this whole fake news to do, which I think is a passing kind of fancy of a certain guy in the White House, but the diminished kind of regard that certain quarters of the public feel about the media, it's not hurtful to me. I still have great faith in the media.
Mm-hmm.
I think I still know where to go to get real news.
Mm-hmm.
I do not think fake news is an aberration to me. How do you? I mean, you are a newsman. I mean, I do work for a newspaper,
right.
But this show is not. You know, my show is not. You are delivering news,
right?
And when you hear all the falderal about fake news and don't believe anything about this and the media stinks, how does that affect you?
I'd be dishonest if I didn't say it upset me.
Yeah, good.
But I think there are two, I don't want to say justifications for it. There's two ways to look at this. I will make you a bet that everyone who believes the fake news scenario,
uh-huh,
reads a real newspaper, watches a real TV news show, and listens to a real radio newscast wherever they live. And to them, they don't see that what they do, whether it's left or right or center,
right.
Doesn't matter.
I agree.
That's what they do. That's a part of their life, and they don't see that, what they use, the news services they use, as fake news. It's everything outside of their world that they consider fake news.
Yeah.
But you go to another town, you come from one town to another town in this country, and you will get the local newspaper and read the local sports, check the local weather, check the local places to go to, and read the local news to find out what's happening in that town. You will, in that town, watch the local news and or the national news. And you might listen to a local radio station or your own station on the internet or on your phone.
Yeah.
So there's that angle.
It's interesting.
I think the other angle is that this has been, I don't know, if you're the wordsmith, fomented.
Yeah.
Is that a correct?
Yeah.
Okay. The other angle is this has been fomented by the overwhelming rise of delivery platforms.
Yep. No.
Every person.
No question.
You can rightfully say that if I were to take my phone out right now and go on Facebook Live, that's news.
Yeah.
It's not news.
Right.
It's me going on Facebook Live because I can.
Well, I could go on, get my phone, go on Twitter and say, those of you listening to Roger Badish now would be really amazed to know that he is really 7 feet 1 inches tall. Period.
Yeah. And those who know me would laugh till they had a heart attack.
Yeah.
Those who don't know me would sit there and go, oh, yeah.
Hogan says, I can't
believe it.
I know. See, that's you're so right about the fomenting of this thing. It's so all over the place that I sometimes wish that there was no Facebook, there was no Twitter. But because we are in this media business, hyper alert to numbers of followers, where people in this town buy the scandals of buying followers, it would increase your brand. I mean, you and I are, I guess we're old school. Do your job, do it honestly, and call the guys you taught in high school and see what they think about how you did. That is a great element to the book. Where's your son? How long is your son going to be here?
We're not sure.
Okay.
He's in Iceland right now for a friend's wedding.
Oh,
so I'm back in the room.
I've started
my next chapter.
Next
chapter will be when I came back to Chicago. So this is a chapter following our time in Las Vegas when I came back to Chicago and went to work at WKQXQ 101, for about 2 years when it was over the merchandise mark.
Yeah.
And so I've only written about 3 pages. I've gotten to the point of where I first walked into the 19th floor into the, I don't know if you've ever been over at the old NBC.
I sure was.
On the 19th floor, you walk in and there's this, oh my gosh, from before, like the 1940s, low lighting, rich dark wood, big cushy chairs in the lobby. And then when I would walk down the hallway and I specifically talk about where each room was and what side of the building I was on and everything, and just all my first impressions. And then I've even contacted someone who a lot of our listeners might remember from the Chicago area, Dave McBride, because as I've kind of, as we get older, we don't, we lose a little thought. But I asked Dave, who I worked with at Q101, he came in after me, what is the name of that person that... the first name I think is this, and he says, well, I don't know any this, but I do remember it. I go, that's who I was thinking of.
It's so great that you can do this. We are following on this program, which is called After Hours, the ongoing adventures of Roger, that I call Roger Badish Writes His Biography. And it gets more fascinating every time we talk, and it gets more fascinating just to know the way you think.
Thank you, sir. I got to run and do a newscast.
Oh, my God, you do the news here.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll get into that one day.
Phil.
You do the news at this station? Oh, I thought there was another Roger Badish. Now, someone will say there are two Roger Badishes. You're 7 feet 1 tall. Well, thank you all for listening. It's sort of an interesting, eclectic show, as I will call it. Thank you, Aubrey Mumpower, for your engineering expertise. Ben Anderson, for coming back from wherever the hell you were. We will learn where the hell he was next weekend on the show. He's going to give us a full report on that. Carl Amari is coming up after this program. Roger is very fast on his feet, so I know he's in there.